How you doing? This is Mike for Working Class Thoughts. So tonight's episode is actually going to be on Richard Trenton Chase, better known as the Vampire of Sacramento. So although Richard was known as being from Sacramento, California, in fact, he was actually from Santa Clara, California. For those of you that don't know, in the psychology and criminology of serial killers, there are a couple of scales, triads, and graphs that exist, etc. and etc. One of them is known as the McDonald Triad. By the time Richard reached the age of 10, he showed signs of all three of the McDonald Triad. Now, within this triad exists bedwetting, arson, as well as cruelty to animals. Now, it is said by professionals that these indicators individually are possible indicators of future violent tendencies. And Richard already had all three at the age of 10. Now, interestingly enough, as he matured, he developed hypochondria. In fact, he often complained his heart would stop beating. Even crazier, he complained that someone stole his pulmonary artery. He was known to grab oranges and actually press them against his forehead. When he was asked why he did this, he stated, "You know what? The vitamin C will be absorbed by my brain." Richard even believed that his cranial bones would actually separate, and that he could actually feel them moving around. Now, I want to revert back to vampires in 101. For those of you that don't know, in lycanthropy, and werewolf and vampirism, they often believe in shape-shifting. So this is where his theory of bones moving around most likely actually stem from. So to prove it to professionals, he actually shaved his head so not only he could watch it move, but the doctors could watch it move as well. He moved out of his mother's house. As he stated, she was just simply trying to poison me. So he gets an apartment with his friends. He always complained. His friends, his roommates were actually a band, and Richard really wanted to be a member of this band. Now, they always complained. Richard was drunk. He was always on alcohol, pot, and massive amounts of LSD. Now, Richard would often randomly walk around the apartment completely naked, even in front of their own company. Now, his roommates, they tried to do the whole roommate thing, you know, let's smoke a couple bowls and have a couple drinks and talk things out, you know. In fact, this is their effort to try to convince him to move out. Richard just flat out says, "Hey, I ain't fucking going nowhere. You ain't making me move out of my own apartment." So eventually, they had no choice but to move out. Now, once the apartment was completely empty, it actually freed Richard to start doing whatever he wants, and we all know that ain't going to be no good, right? So he began to capture and kill all kinds of animals. Sometimes he would eat them raw even. Sometimes he took the raw meat, he blended them with Coca-Cola and drank it instead of eating it raw as a whole. Richard began believing that if he ingested it by drinking it, he was able to prevent his heart from shrinking in efforts to stop it from beating. So all of this, he actually thought his heart would stop beating if he didn't do all this. So he also injected the blood of animals directly into his penis, believing that it got him an erection because the blood would basically swell up in it in his mind. Now, I want you to think back on the mind of somebody who already exhibits some of these traits. Now he's out on his own. Now, even in school, he had erectional problems, being able to achieve an erection. So he probably did some reading and found out that its blood actually swelled up inside of your penis and it causes an erection. So in his mind, that translated to, let me get blood from an animal and directly inject it right into it to, you know, problem fixed in his mind. So even in high school, like I said, he suffered from erectional problems. Now, Richard did spend time in a mental institution. In fact, in 1973. Now, in 1976, he was actually forced to go to a mental hospital. This was after he was caught injecting rabbit's blood into his veins directly. Now, the staff there actually nicknamed him Dracula due to his complete blood fixation, which when he was there, he was even caught getting birds through the window. He actually caught 3 birds, and what he did was he broke their neck and directly drank their blood from their bodies. Now, he would also grab stolen needles from the staff and actually extract the blood from his therapy dogs. So, for those of you that don't know, in mental institutions, a lot of times they will have what they call therapy dogs, and they will use these dogs and, in effect, hoping that the patients will show signs of affection and human emotions, what they call basic human emotions. So Richard got, and I did, I can use these dogs and I can get the blood I need to be able to survive. So Richard was eventually diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. So he began to start all kinds of treatments with psychotropic drugs. Now, of course, he was able to fool the staff over time to deem him no longer a threat to society. Now, finally, in 1976, he was released to his mother's custody. She did not believe the doctors and kept him off of his medications. Now, she eventually got him his own apartment. He tried getting roommates again, but you know what? Each one said, dude, you're a freak, and moved out. So one of my favorite parts of this case, actually, is sometime in the mid-1977, Richard was stopped on the Native American reservation in Pyramid Lake, Nevada, which is near Reno. He was completely butt-naked, and he was covered with blood all over from his head down to his feet. And they found a bucket of blood in his truck, in the backseat of his truck. Now, after an investigation, it was found to be cow blood. And although it is creepy and weird, it is not illegal, so authorities were forced to not press any charges against him, and they simply escorted him off the reservation, from what I understand. Now, before I get into his murder spree, I also came across a story that his mother was looking for their family cat, and she found Richard nailed down with the cat in his lap. Now, he actually had his hand all the way up to his elbow inside of the cat, grabbing organs out of it. Now, she stated, I thought Richard was just simply petting the cat. But as she got closer, the truth actually revealed itself. So, December 20th, 1977, Richard took his first victim by a drive-by shooting. Now, interestingly enough, on a documentary that I found, they stated that the Sacramento detective said back in 1977, drive-by shooting was not something that we used in Sacramento. It was not something that was common. In fact, it was brand new. So you guys have Richard to thank for that one, for the term drive-by shooting. Now, the victim was Ambrose Griffin, a 51-year-old engineer who was the father of two. No more than 2 weeks later, however, he attempted to enter a home. However, he found that the doors were locked, so he simply just gave up. Later on, his explanation to detectives was just simply great. He stated that he took a locked door as a sign that he was not welcome. However, if somebody left the door unlocked, that simply meant, well, hell, come on in. Now, you got to understand the vampire culture again to understand this one. In the vampire lore, you're not able to enter someone's home unless they first ask you to enter. So, one time he was even caught going through things, because he found a door unlocked, and as he was going through things, he was caught by a couple, and he was chased off their property. However, upon investigating, they later realized he urinated and took a dump on their infant's child bed and all over their clothes. So, January 23rd, 1978, Richard broke into the house owned by Teresa Wallen, and I want you guys to realize she was 3 months pregnant at the time. Now, he shot her a total of 3 times. Yes, I know it's cliche, but he did shoot her 3 times. He was not done with her yet, however. Once she was dead, he had sex with her corpse, stabbing her with her own butcher knife that he found in the kitchen while making love to her corpse. Once he satisfied himself, he removed her organs, then decided to cut off her nipples, i.e., actually, he cut off the whole breast. So then he decided he was going to drink her blood. He took dog feces that he found outside and shoved it down her throat before he left. Now, January 27th, 1978, he broke into the home of 38-year-old Evelyn Meredith. Once inside, he bumped into her friend, Danny Meredith. He shot him with a .22 caliber handgun. Now, interestingly enough, I want to point out that roommates and people that talked to Richard Trenton Chase often stated the guy would go, he wouldn't leave anywhere unless he had that .22 handgun on him. So he then took his wallet and keys, and then he found Evelyn. He shot her, as well as her 6-year-old son, Jason, and her 22-year-old nephew, David Fiera. Then he completely mutilated Evelyn's body. He even had sex with her corpse again and ate her body parts again and drank her blood again. Now, a knock on the door actually freaked Richard smooth out. So he took her body. Naturally, the concerned neighbor, upon realizing what the scene looked like, he called the police. Now, Richard did not have time to clean up this murder scene. So shortly after, police found his handprint and his shoe print left in the blood, and he was arrested shortly after. So when they searched his apartment, however, that's when the horror story really began. They found the walls, the floor, the ceiling, his fridge, and every kitchen item was soaked completely in blood. So in 1979, Richard stood trial for 6 counts of murder. So to avoid the death penalty, the defense team, they tried to find him guilty by reason of insanity. Now, this would actually lower it to a second-degree murder rate and result in a life sentence. Now, Richard's whole case completely hinged on his history of mental illness. They said it showed his crimes cannot possibly be premeditated. Now, May 8th, 1980, the juror found Richard Chase guilty of 6 counts of first-degree murder, each one first-degree murder. Now, they completely rejected the defense's argument that he was insane. He was sentenced to death by gas chamber. Now, interestingly enough, other inmates knew he had a history of violent crimes. In fact, in a weird twist, the inmates actually was afraid of Richard Trenton Chase. And I find that fascinating because you got to understand how little the guy was when he went to prison. But the other inmates were literally afraid of him. Reporter, like, repeatedly afraid of him. So, in fact, prison officials often stated that inmates would walk up to Richard in prison and just say, "Man, why don't you just do it? Why don't you just commit suicide? Why wait it out? They're going to kill you anyways." So every single day, they were in his ear trying to say, "Why don't you just do it? Why don't you just kill yourself?" You know what I mean? So Robert Essler, he managed to get an interview with Richard during his time that he was locked up. Now, in the interview, Richard often talked of being afraid of Nazis and UFOs. Now, he explained to the interviewer, "Yes, I actually killed him, but it was not my fault," he claimed. "I had to kill to keep myself. I mean, after all," looking at Robert, he said, "Wouldn't you do the same?" And then Robert said that Richard asked him for a radar gun. He said, "When I asked him why, Richard said that he could use it to catch the Nazi UFOs, the Nazis and the UFOs, that way they could stand trial for the murders and they could see that Richard is actually innocent." And then Richard handed me a bunch of macaroni and cheese, he stated. It turns out he had been keeping it in his socks, and he believed that prison officials were helping the Nazis who were trying to kill him with poisoned food, and he wanted the interviewer to test the food to find out if it was poisoned or not. Now, I found this interview simply amazing. I'm not saying he is innocent of any crime. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying that it does show his mental health to actually be severely mentally challenged. I think with the proper treatment when he was younger, as well as without his mother's constant interfering with the medical professionals, these murders might not have happened. Then again, he did have the ability to fool professionals at the same time. And keep in mind that in the 1960s, the 1970s, and the 1980s, the mental health system was actually very poor. I always ask people to remember this. So on December 26, 1980, Richard was found dead in his cell. They performed an autopsy and found that he had committed suicide by taking all his antidepressants at one time. So back to his mental health real quick. Richard had an obsession all his life with his health and his body, as well as wanting to know how his body functioned. So he would often have paranoid episodes and would go to the emergency room. Once there, he would state that his arteries are missing, his stomach was actually backwards, and often would state that his heart would randomly stop beating. He was also a paranoid schizophrenic after the doctors could not help his mind anymore. And this is Richard thinking right here. Richard stated that after going to doctors and hospitals his whole life, he finally realized the doctors cannot help him. So the only solution he had was to kill animals and eat their body parts and drink their blood in efforts to stay alive. So doctors actually insisted later on in his adolescent years that the reason that none of the treatment nor drugs actually worked on Richard Trenton Chase was due to all the drug use, illegal drug use, especially, yes, you guessed it, acid. So around 1976, early on, his mother also, oh, that was around 1976, but I want to point out that early on in his childhood, his mother was a hypochondriac and often complained of being sick constantly and that the men that she was infatuated with was actually trying to kill her. Again, I'm not trying to say that he's innocent of anything. I am saying he is a twisted killer and he committed some brutal murders. I'm just saying, from childhood to adolescent, he did not receive proper medical treatment, both from family, friends, and medical personnel alike. And yes, this case, in case you're wondering, has inspired movies, TV shows, and music. And we're going to go over some of those. So a movie called Rampage is actually based on these murders. A CSI episode, Justice is Served, is based on these murders. On the show Criminal Minds, Richard is mentioned and portrayed on the 11th episode of the first season of Criminal Minds. And also, in another episode of Criminal Minds, Richard is inspiration for an episode titled Unsub. Richard is also mentioned in Season 1, Episode 3 of BBC crime drama Luther. On Discovery ID and 2011 TV special Lore, Deadly Obsession was a two-hour-long documentary which was in reenactment of Richard Trenton Chase's crimes. So Richard was the focus of two episodes of 245 and 246 of the last podcast on the left. Now, the Discovery Channel also featured Richard Trenton Chase on the episode of New Detectives in the 1997 episode Mindhunter. Brother Lynch Hung, Sacramento native and Sacramento rapper, mentions Richard Trenton Chase all the time in albums, but it's specifically an album called Book 3 on a song called Refuse to Lose. So Richard is also found in a video game called Deadlight. He's also featured in Joe Nesbro's 2017 novel Thirst quite a bit. He's also been written by Lieutenant Ray Biondi, who wrote the book Dracula Killer in 1992. And naturally, this book is actually based on the case that he investigated. So back to the acid and other things. I want you to realize that in the 1960s, 1970s, and 1980s, we had a large government influx of focus on illegal drugs and the effects on families and environment. A lot of Department of Human Resources type of agencies started a lot of studying on the effects of drugs in the family and vice versa, the environment. So a lot of times, killers that were arrested in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, if they found out they did drugs such as cocaine, methamphetamine, acid, angel dust, things like that, immediately psychologists are like, well, it must be all the acid. It must be all the meth. It must be all that. So instead of actually owning up and saying that us as medical professionals fucked up and didn't do a good job at studying him, we're going to go with he did too much acid, which is the cause for him to having so much breakdowns. Now, I will agree with the medical professionals in the aspect that with proper treatment, he could have overcame his drug addiction and actually probably been able to function fairly well because of his intelligence level with proper medication. That's if he actually took it. Now, earlier you heard me state that he was able to fool medical professionals. And I do want to say that again. Anytime you come across a serial killer that is able to fool psychologists and able to fool panels of medical professionals, more than likely, they also have the ability to fake like they're better. What I call that is a nice boy effect. And what that means is whenever they're being watched, either in a medical facility, being watched by psychologists, being watched by counselors, being watched in prison or jail, they do what I call the good boy method. And what that is I'm going to take all my medication. I'm going to do all my treatment. I'm going to say everything you want to hear. That way, you deem me safe to be released to society. Although I may not agree with your methods, that's what they do. Now, I do believe that Richard Trenton Chase was a master at this game. Each time in his childhood, each time that he was locked up in a mental institution, he was granted release and deemed able to function in society with medical treatment. That meant medication, by the way. Now, instantly, whenever he got home, his mother, the hypochondriac, immediately said, no, Richard, you don't need the medication, and took him off of it, and Richard would have outbursts. He then proceeded, on top of that, once he quit taking his medication, his paranoid delusion started taking full effect. And over a period of time, even thought that his mother was trying to kill him by poisoning, which led him to wanting to move out. And when he got his own place, he got some band members, right? So he wanted to be part of a band, but they were freaked out by him. So he basically kept himself locked in this room at all times, they said. He would never come outside, and if he did, it was for an outburst, such as running around butt-naked in front of their company. So, I want you guys to remember all of this whenever, that's why I'm repeating it all, so that you guys can remember all of it. Because all of this should be in play whenever you're looking at this case. These are all factors that indicate severe mental trauma and severe mental handicaps. The way that and these are called responses. So, Richard's responses to social cues is completely off base. Without medication, without proper treatment. He just can't function. It's not that he can't function, it's that he just gives in to all his wants and desires. That's something else people need to realize. A lot of times, these people actually know better. They simply just don't give an F. You know what I mean? And that's a fact. In Richard's case, I think it's a mixture of not caring and just being himself, as far as he's concerned. He was always concerned about wanting to be popular, always concerned about concerned about his body and how he looked and the whole nine. He was always concerned about all of that. So I want you guys to realize that. I mean, the guy had a lot of problems growing up. And I didn't touch bases on it in a research material, but I probably should now. His father was also severely, and when I say severely, that's not using a word lightly. There should be a stronger word to actually describe the amount of abuse that his mother and father actually did on Richard growing up. There should be a stronger word used for something like that, and I can't think of one off the top of my head right now. But what I can say is it was very, very bad. And whenever you start looking at childhood psychology, one thing you will find out is 90% of the time when you come across a problem child, that is reflected into their home life, i.e. environmental studies. So they'll use the environmental studies, and in this environmental studies is home life, school life, social life. So these are all new things, though. And Richard Trenton Chase's childhood, these things weren't an option. This stuff was not commonplace. You know what I mean? So a lot of times that these medical professionals, they're going on what the patient is stating, and they're going on what the other medical professionals have already said. And they're going on what law enforcement has said, and then they're basing their whole case study on all of that. So what that means is, let's say that the mother disagrees with all the diagnosis that he already had. Richard naturally disagrees with all the diagnosis he always had, right? Now you have this blame game going on. You know what I mean? You got to understand that although he's had these problems, he's up to this point we're talking about, he had only hurt animals. And for all you people that's part of PETA, I'm sorry to say this, it's not illegal to hurt animals. So in Richard's case, in his childhood, that's the only things that he had. Now, these are strong indicators, and they pressured his mother to be aware of it. But his mother was a hypochondriac who didn't believe him in the first place. You get what I'm saying? So as soon as she could, it was, Richard, let's get out of here. You know what I mean? And bam, the cycle started completing itself again. So whenever I'm going over these serial killer cases, that's why you find me going after so many of them with their mental history. Because I just feel that so many people do not realize that at these time periods that serial killers are more active, mental therapy and mental treatment and mental health was not as good as what it is now. I mean, in the 1950s, 60s, 70s and 80s, if you were effed up in the head, you were just effed up in the head. You were the crazy guy in the family. You know, like, they would make fun of you, basically. You'd be like the guy that never moves out of your mama's attic. That whole stereotype. You know what I mean? They'd call you names, whatever. It was just commonplace. I mean, you get what I'm saying? It just was not there. They did not function on that. You were just kind of the screwed up guy in around the neighborhood. You know what I mean? That's just how they treated you. And this is common in his time period. Now, again, I'm not justifying anything because there are a lot of people that went through the same thing that had a lot of handicaps that did not act the same way. Now, I do believe that the amount of dosage that he had of each one of those illegal substances probably did have a very big portion in affecting his decisions as far as what he did. I just don't want to jump on this bandwagon of he drank so much alcohol, smoked so much pot, and he took so much acid that is the complete reason why he flipped out and started killing people. I don't think it's that, because when you look at his childhood, you see that he's already been diagnosed at a very young age as a paranoid schizophrenic, and he already has outbursts, and he already had already documented cases of him having cruelty to animals. You already had documented cases of him having arson problems. You already had documented cases of him having bedwetting problems. All of this in his childhood. These are all three of those things. I mean, like I said earlier, individually, psychologists say that those are strong triggers for violent tendencies in society. Now, he had all three. Do you get that? All three. So those are very strong indicators. But yet his mother was constantly fighting the hospital. You know what I mean? About letting him go. So that's really how that went about. I have a feeling this is probably going to be a little bit more shorter of an episode than what I normally do. But I do want to focus on that a little bit, though. And as far as the blood drinking thing goes, hold on 1 minute. All right, so we're going to look at the blood drinking part of it. So around the time in his childhood, we had cruelty to animals. We had all those. We just covered those. So in his adolescent years is around the time that he started killing the animals. He was already killing animals, but it was around the time that he was having erectile problems in high school. And he was severely embarrassed by this. In fact, one could argue he was almost traumatized by the fact that he could not get a hard-on around his freshman year in high school. And if you're a guy, you can understand why. You know what I mean? So he was desperate, man. He was desperate. He wanted to be a jock. He wanted to be that all-American guy in the 70s and 80s that was a stereotypical guy that you would see on the front of magazines. That's what he wanted. But instead, he was just a frail, tall, skinny-looking guy. You know what I mean? And he couldn't see an erection. And girls would make... I do know that I did come across two reports that girls are severely making fun of him throughout the school for that at one point. Now, he basically was a loner, though. I mean, he was isolated. Richard Trent Chase had a strong history from like childhood all the way up into his later adolescence years of total isolation. And if you know anything about psychology, you know that total isolation is a recipe for disaster. When you totally isolate somebody from other people, then you are literally able to brainwash them into whatever you're wanting to do. Now, I think that in a sense, Richard isolating himself was even worse, because when he isolated himself, he would isolate himself and he wasn't taking like one little paper sheet of acid. It's reported that Richard was so high on acid that people couldn't he couldn't function at all. And this is said by people that actually dropped acid a lot. Said, man, I've done this a lot, but there is no way I would do the amount that Richard Trenton Chase does. You know what I mean? So I do believe that the fact that he already had mental problems, mental history problems, and the fact that he was doing such large doses, on top of that, he wasn't being properly medicated. And I think all those factors are the trigger that actually forced him to take his first life. You know what I mean? I think up until that point, he was just on the animal wagon. You know what I mean? Like, if he was still his later, I think, I want to say he was in his 20s, his early 20s when he was caught in Reno with that cow incident. Whenever he was stopped on a Native American reservation and they found him covered butt naked in blood. That he was still on animals up till that point. It wasn't until the last time that he was released that he started actually killing. You know what I mean? It was the last time he was released when he started killing, I think. And that's something else that we need to focus on. So when you're looking at the case of Richard Trenton Chase, there's all kinds of things that you need to look at. Oh, I never did state that, did I? Okay. So the blood drinking. Why did he drink blood? Richard Trenton Chase. And I also want to say that I did a podcast episode on vampirism and a vampirism cell culture. So a lot of this stuff, if you're having a hard time understanding what I'm talking about, go back and look at the episode titled Vampirism. I actually cover a lot of the subculture within that in that episode. But anyways, the long story short of it is in vampirism subculture, they actually believe that blood is life. That means that they must have it in order to stay alive. A lot of people will go so as far in vampirism to actually bathe themselves completely in blood. Now, the best example of this would be Elizabeth Bathory. She was a countess in Europe. And what she would do was she would take the peasant girls and she would stick them on stakes above her tub. And as their bodies would fall onto the stake farther, she would take another stake and she would gently press it against their skin until all the blood was drained into the tub. And that's how she would take her bath. And then she would take the blood of girls and she put it in her makeup containers and she would actually use it like blush because she believed it helped preserve her skin and make her look young. So a lot of people within the subculture has a long history of using blood for everything from looking youthful to being athletic to having more testosterone to having more sexual ability to having better looks. They believe that if they don't have it, they'll die, that their hearts will stop. See, a lot of this stuff that I'm talking about can be covered in that one episode I'm talking about, but this also is covered in this episode because Richard Trenton Chase was in the vampire subculture before the vampire subculture became the vampire subculture. So I'm willing to bet most likely most of the vampire lore that Richard Trenton Chase actually read about, and I'm assuming that most of the stuff that he knew about the subculture based on how he acted and what he did was actually learned from books, TVs, and movies. I'm willing to bet it actually that that's where he came up with the ideas at. I don't think that Richard Trenton Chase was going to clubs. Now, don't get me wrong. There were active vampire clubs around the Sacramento area and the Bay Area in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. They were underground clubs and they were active. But the fact of the matter, we have to go back and look at Richard Trenton Chase's psychological profile. And what do we see? He was antisocial and had severe antisocial tendencies. So there is no way in hell that he would go out of his way to go to a club when he had antisocial tendencies, anxieties on top of that. He wasn't the type of person to go to a club. So I think that everything that he learned about that subculture, he actually learned from music, TV, and books because he was antisocial. I think that when he was locked up in his bedroom, like his roommates were staying, and a guy would stay in his bedroom for hours and he would never come out. He would just stay in his bedroom, tripping out on acid and doing massive amounts of drugs. I think that he was actually in there isolating himself and he was reading about the subculture. More than likely, he probably went to like a public library, got a bunch of books out on it, locked himself up in his bedroom, became obsessed with the subject. Nobody knew that he was obsessed with it because guess what? You got to remember something. The apartment was actually Richard's apartment. He just moved in those guys. And on top of that, his roommates often stated that he would completely isolate himself and lock himself in the bedroom. But on top of that, whenever he left, he actually severely, they said, they used the word severely, locked up his bedroom so no one else can get inside it. So whatever he was doing in there, he didn't want absolutely nobody to know what the hell it was under any circumstance. So I think that's what he was doing. I think he was doing massive amounts of drugs. He was reading into that subculture and he was trying to do that in efforts to try to figure out his own health. See, in his mind, he was smart enough to know that there's a solution to it. He just didn't believe that it was a doctor's because Richard was a paranoid schizophrenic. And Richard believed that all the doctors were actually Nazis who were trying to kill him. So the last people in his mind that he trusted was going to be a doctor. You know what I mean? So every single time a doctor would give Richard a pill, Richard thought that it was a Nazi and would hide the pill and not take it. And this is from childhood all the way up to his adolescence year. We have to remember this. So I think the whole time he was concerned about his health and his well-being, but I think he went about it. Because he didn't trust medical professionals. The only person Richard Trenton Chase actually trusted was his mother. And I think that his mother having mental issues on her own and not receiving treatment because she was also a hypochondriac, only on a different level. It literally is the blind leading the blind. And so as he progressed and became an adult, it was just a matter of time. He was literally self-taught about everything he knew. He had no outside, he went to school. Now I came across reports though that would argue that in school he was actually popular. people stated that Richard Trenton Chase was actually not popular, but, you know, he wasn't the popular kid, but he wasn't the most, like, worst kid kind of thing. It's how they made it out to be. In fact, he was part of social and academic clubs in school as well. But yet, he was diagnosed as having severe anxiety and social problems. So that's the part that perplexed me, because I understand what social problems are, and I understand what the anxiety goes into factor with that. So the only part of this case when I was looking at it that really, really gave me a run for my money was that. Because everything up to that point was showing everything that would make sense. The total isolation, the lack of medical treatment throughout his life, just everything was just going right to point until I got to this weird article that was written by somebody that went to school with him that said he was actually in academic clubs and he wasn't like the most liked, but he was liked, is how the person wrote it. So right there, that really throws a lot of the psychological study out the window in a way, because that eliminates like five things on it in a way. So I started asking myself, how is this possible? And then I realized the first time he was locked up, he actually fooled the medical personnel. In fact, not just the first time, but the second time as well. Both times that he was locked up in a mental institution, he managed to fool the whole panel of psychologists to believe that he was perfectly able to function in society. So that's when I realized he was still using the same method in high school. It was a method that he had learned at some point in his life. He learned how to manipulate and he learned how to play his edge. And what I mean by that is he learned how he has all this stuff inside his head and his body, but he learned really young that he couldn't let people know about it. You know what I'm saying? So instead, he played the role. You know what I mean? In the same way that he fooled all the medical personnel and all the hospitals and all the psychologists and fooled all these other people, I think in a way he was able to fool people in the community and fool people at school as well. He wasn't truly enjoying any of it. In fact, he was probably a nervous wreck inside. And I say this because when you look at Richard Trenton Chase's body language, when you look at the footage of him and you actually look at the pictures that was taken of him, you really actually see someone who's beaten up emotionally. His posture is a posture of somebody with very low self-esteem and very high anxiety with very, very, very low self-esteem. His body language is slunched over. It's slunched over and almost all the, even pictures before he got locked up. Now, I understand that in pictures locked up, it's normal for a guy to be like, you know, kind of like, oh shit, I fucked up, just slunched over. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about pictures that were taken of him before anything happened, where he was still the same way. He would always have his head kind of slunched over. His body was always kind of in a slunch kind of position. That's right there in body language is a sign of very low self-esteem whenever that happens. So I think in a way that's where all of that stems from. But anyways, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. This has been Mike for Working Class Thoughts. This has been the Vampire of Sacramento, better known as Richard Trenton Chase, and his nickname was the Vampire of Sacramento. In fact, he also had another nickname, as we discovered earlier in this episode, the Dracula, that was given to him by medical personnel, which is another thing I have a problem with. Why are the medical personnel encouraging the behavior? They're supposed to be making him not want to act it out, but instead they're encouraging it by saying, hey, Dracula, how you doing, Count Dracula? That's encouraging Richard's behavior. Just want to throw that out there. But anyways, this has been Mike for Working Class Thoughts. This has been the Vampire Sacramento, Richard Trenton Chase, episode 43. I hope you guys enjoyed. A new episode will be coming your way very, very soon. And this episode will not be about serial killers. Well, anyway. But anyways, this has been Mike for Working Class Thoughts. Everybody have a great night.